ॐ भद्रं धरणे पश्यामः देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तिष्ठुवागुंसस्तनूभिः पश्येम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति न पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Verse 15. Eto radi palam yesham yesham. Eto radi palam yesham. Adira hetu palasya cha. Adira hetu palasya cha. Tatha janma bhavete sham. Tatha janma bhavete sham. Putra janma piturvita. Putra janma piturvita. Etoh adihi phalam yesham adihi hetuh phalasya cha tatha janma bhavet tesham putrat janma pitur yatha. Just in English, in the previous number 14, it says, for those Dvaitins, really the Sankhyas and the Vaisheshikas, for those Dvaitins, for whom the pala means the effect, is the cause, is the origin of the cause. For whom the effect is the origin of the cause, and for whom the cause is the origin, or the karana, the cause of the effect. How can they say that the cause and the effect are beginningless? That there's beginninglessness for the cause and the effect. One thing again, and so this is just what's leading into this next verse. That's why I'm repeating it. The thing to remember here also is that here, when we're talking about cause and effect, what they're specifically referring to is the rebirth of the jiva. What causes the jiva, the individual, to take birth after birth after birth? And so what we say is, it's really punya and papa becomes the hetu. Hetu means the cause. Your punya and papa, which is the accrued subtle effects of your actions, right? Remember that there's two types of effects of action. One is called the adrishta karmas. The drishta karmas. The drishta karmas are just the immediate effects of your action. Like if I want to get a glass of water, I have to walk over, get the glass of water, drink the water, and then my thirst is quenched. That's the immediate effect of an action. But when we're talking about adrishta karmas are the subtle effects of my actions. So the kind of the moral base of the actions that we call punya and papa. And so say the example that is used often for that is if a surgeon performs an operation on his patient with every care and every intention to save the life of the patient, but the patient dies, you know, that surgeon is not accruing papa karma because the intent of his action was to save the life of the patient. And yet, as a surgeon, he cut the patient, he did all of that, but the patient was not able to survive. But there's no papa karma, there's no negative karmas accrued for that. If anything, there's punya karmas because of the intention. Right? Whereas if the same knife, a knife had been used to stab a person with the intent to kill the person, to hurt the person, that's going to accrue papa karma because of the intention of the action. And so in the whole Shastra, the whole kind of Vedic, with the Vedic container, what causes you to take this particular birth at this particular time is your punyam papa. It's the punyam papa. The moment of death is going to attract the punyam papa in your sanchitta account, which is responsible for taking this particular physical body. Okay? And so then the punyam papa become the cause of the pola, right? They become the hetu, the cause of the pola, which is this particular body with the prarabdha karma that this body goes through. But now, so we say that, but then the problem is that now this body that you have is in this birth, in this physical plane, is what performs the karma, which accrues, which is responsible for the punya and papa. So having this, having a birth in this plane, where there's kartritvam, where there's doership, that one who has that sense of doership is performing karmas and accruing punya and papa. And it is that punya and papa that is responsible for the pola of the next birth. So what happens there is that in this situation, what is the hetu becomes the pola, the hetu, you know, becomes the, creates the pola, but the pola is necessary to create the hetu. And so then it becomes like this infinite chicken and egg type of regress. That's the problem. So if this is, this is where the Dvaitins are kind of stuck, because they're stuck in Maya. And so they're stuck in this kind of infinite loop, this regress that goes back as a what we call an infinite regress. And you can never get to the beginning of it, because every hetu is itself a pola. And so now in this next verse, he gives the example of father-son. So he says, hetoho adihi palam yesham, for whom the pola, means the physical body, is the cause, the adi, of the hetu, right? The pola, this physical body, is the cause for the punya and papa. But that punya and papa is the cause for the physical body. So they, then he says, so for whom the effect is the cause, is the pola is the cause for the effect, and also the effect is the cause for the pola, right? So the body is the cause for the punya and papa, the punya and papa is the cause for taking the body. So he says this, tata janma bhavet, leave that for now, tesham putra janma pituhu yata. So what he says is, we start the translation like this, yata, just as the birth, it's just like this, just as the birth of the father is from the son, just as the birth of the father is from the son, similarly to ta, there is the birth of the hetu from the pola. And so how they're thinking about it is incorrect, and so this is going to be something that has to be broken down. But he's basically saying, yes, it's true that the both are anadi. The pola, you know, the pola and the hetu are both anadi. They're both beginningless. And the father is the son, and the son is the father. Right? The father is the son is the father. So in the commentary, so that would mean that say, as I as the daughter, if I use my example as myself, I as the daughter am going to give birth to my mother. This is the argument that we come back. So you mean that you the son, are going to give birth to your father? Is that really how it is? Are you going to give birth to your father? We're going to say, that's not really how it works. There has to be, in cause-effect, an order. The father gives birth to the son, who becomes a father to his son, who becomes a father to his son. It's not that you are the, that you, the son, are the father of your father. right? You're going to be the father of your son. So there's a chroma there. Chroma means an order. In any type of cause effect, there's an order. So now the problem's going to come. Who came first, the father or the son? Who came first? It's kind of like a chicken and egg problem. And so this cause-effect relationship goes in, and within the creation goes into anadi, but it's a beginningless progression, an infinite regress. It's not beginningless. Not one thing there is beginningless. It's a beginningless chroma, a beginningless progression. So you can't, and that's not what they're saying. They want the prakriti itself, the cause of this creation, to itself be beginningless. But actually, there's a cause-effect progression. You know, one does not, one produces the other, which produces the other, which produces the other, and that's how cause-effect works. So what he says in this next, so that's all that's what is in this verse, and then he's going to go on. So let's go to the next one. So he tries to make clear the fallacy of this. So he says, Sambhave hetu palayoho, sambhave hetu palayoho, eshitavya kramastvaya, eshitavya kramastvaya, yugapat sambhave yasmat, yugapat sambhave yasmat, asambho vishanavat, asambandho vishanavat, sambhave hetu palayoho, eshitavyaha kramaha tvaya, yugapat sambhave yasmat, asambandaha vishanavat. He says, he's trying to straighten out this mess. So he says, sambhave hetu palayoho. When you say there is sambhava, sambhava means birth. When there is a birth of both the cause and the effect, hetu and pola, so when both are being born, the hetu itself is being born, right? The hetu is being born, the hetu, the punya papa, is being born, is being created from the pola, which is the person. So the person, the jiva, is producing the punya and papa, which again produces the person in terms of the physical body, this reincarnation. Okay? So both are being born. Both are continually being born. The hetu is being born from the pala is being born from the hetu. And so in this situation, he says, eshitavyaha kramaha tvaya. For you, by somebody who's in this situation, there has to be, you have to posit a krama, an order. And when you have cause and effect like this, there has to be a sequence. The cause produces the effect, and then the effect itself produces a cause, and then that cause produces an effect. This, we have so many drishtantas for. We have all kinds of illustrations for this. We have no illustrations for a beginningless cause. We only have illustrations for a cause itself, which has been produced, which produces an effect. So, because the Sankhya is using anumana, is using logic, it has to show us something in the world, you know, which shows this type of relationship. And earlier, that came in an earlier verse, and we don't have any such drishtanta for that. But what you need then, what you're actually saying is, yes, we all experience cause and effect, but we all always experience in the form of a krama, an order. The cause produces the effect, which itself becomes a cause and produces effect. That's what we have drishtantas for, and that's what we experience. He says, yugapat sambhave, when the birth is not a krama, is not a sequence, but is yugapat, means simultaneous, mm-hmm. Like both the cause and the effect come together, right? They happen at the same time. Cause is beginningless, the effect is beginningless, they both happen at the same time. He says, if you're saying then that, if that's the case, then there's asambandha. There is no connection at all between the cause and the effect. Asambandha means there's no connection. Because they're happening simultaneously, He gives the example for that, just like Vishanava, that means life, just like Vishanas, just like the horns, you know, the horns of a bull. When the bull is born, the horns are there at the same time. Both are there, horn on the right, a horn on the left, right? There's no cause and effect between these two. There's sambandha. These two, they're related and they come out of the head of the bull, but they have no cause-effect relationship with each other. They both exist, come at exactly the same time, they grow at the same time. So like that, you're saying the cause and effect, both are beginningless, they happen at the same time, they grow at the same time. Then where's their cause-effect relationship? There is no relationship at all. So you need, he tells, you need to come up with a krama. You have to recognize that when you say cause and effect, there is an order. Let's do the next verse, and then I'll talk about this in a little different way. Palat utpajamanasan, palat utpajamanasan, natehe tu prasidyati, natehe tu prasidyati, aprasidda katam hetuhu, aprasidda katam hetuhu, palam utpadayishyasi, palam utpadayishyati. Palat utpajamanaha san nate hetuhu prasidyati. Aprasiddha katam hetuhu palam utpadayishyati. He says, a hetu, a cause, right, which is being produced palat from the effect. So if you have a cause that is being produced, upajamana means being produced. So palat upajamanaha sanna means being. Etu. So a cause which is being produced from the effect. Na prasidyati. For you, because te means for you, you're saying this, that a cause is being produced from an effect. But then, that cause, prasidyati, na prasidyati, it doesn't exist right now. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the cause, you say the cause is being born from the effect, that until it is born, it's not there. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's a problem. So he says, what you're calling a hetu that's coming out of the effect doesn't yet exist. Because it has to be born from the effect. Then he says, aprasiddha katam hetuhu. How can a cause which doesn't exist, aprasiddha katam hetu, how can a cause which doesn't exist, how will that produce an effect? Palam upadayishati. How will that produce an effect? The cause which doesn't exist, how is that going to happen? Because you're saying what you're saying, you know, is that the cause and the effect are beginningless, right? But there is no cause there until it is produced from the effect. And so how can you say that that effect, that cause can produce a pala, because it doesn't exist? And so Sankhya has tried to get around these problems, but the situation is, from a Vedantic standpoint, if you're within duality, you cannot get out of this loop. There's no end to the loop. You just continually go back into an infinite regress. We have, as one in Vedanta, we have as one of our prakriyas, one of our teaching methodologies, is called the karyakarana prakriya. That means the cause-effect prakriya. The cause-effect prakriya methodology resolves into the non-existence of cause-effect for Brahman. We don't view Brahman as the cause for anything. Because if Brahman is anadi, see, this is the whole argument, if conscious being itself is anadi means beginningless, right? Beginningless means it's never gone through any change. It never has come into being. Right? Anadi means that it's never been born. Now the thing is, it's never, now you can say, it's never been born. You mean it doesn't exist? That's within duality. We say that existence itself has never been born. Being itself has never been born. What would, this is the thing. If being has been born, if it has a prior condition, what would its prior condition be? Non-being, right? So how can anything come from non-being? But nothing can come from non-being, because non-being isn't there for anything to come from it. So that means being, and our experience of being, there's no one, there is no possibility of not having an experience of being, because being is the very essence of the whole creation. It is the non-dual truth of the entire creation. So everybody has that experience and identifies with it as me. I am, I exist, I exist, I exist, I exist, I am. So am is your own being is self-evident. I take it absolutely for granted, but the problem is that you fall into this, because of ajnanam, into the superimposition of this me-ness, my own am-ness, as being something that belongs to this body, mind, sense organs, right? That then does go through birth and death and goes through reincarnation and then gets caught in this chakra, in this cycle of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, the cycle of cause, effect, dharma, adharma, punya, papa, leading to this birth, which then accrues more punya, papa, that leads to this birth, which accrues more punya, papa, goes into an infinite regress. That's all because we have identified my being itself, with this cause-effect relationship that is pervades the whole dual creation. But from the standpoint of Advaita Vedanta, Brahman is anadi, and being anadi, beginningless, has never caused anything. We use as our drishtanta the dream. The dream is not something which is born from consciousness. Conscious being doesn't change into the dream. There's a different type of relationship rather than karana-karya, cause-effect. It's where the cause, the Brahman remains as the material cause of the creation, but as the adhishtana. Adhishtana means that material cause that itself doesn't go through any type of modification to become the effect. The clay is the adhishtana of the pot. The rope is the adhishtana of the snake. The I am the adhishtana, my conscious being is the adhishtana of the dream. The rope, see that these are drishtantas, right? The rope doesn't become the snake, and yet the rope is the material cause of the snake, in the sense of what is actually there. The clay doesn't become the pot. Clay remains as clay, but the clay is the material cause of the pot. It's the as the adhishtana. I have never become anything, but I am the material cause, the sat-chit, conscious being, which absolutely everything enjoys, but everything comes into me and goes out of me, right? Every thought I have comes into sat-chit, conscious being, goes out of conscious being. Conscious being doesn't come and go. So, in fact, anything in my experience that includes my body, my mind, my sense organs, my thoughts, my moods, my emotions, all of them come into conscious being, go out of conscious being. The whole universe comes into conscious being and goes out of conscious being. Conscious being is what is actually here, but it itself is not becoming, and it is not changing to become the effect. Whereas then Sankhya will say the prakriti, this maya, has a prior condition, which is anadi. But this anadi, this beginningless prior condition, becomes the manifest world. But then it's that manifest world that goes into unmanifest condition. And then it is that unmanifest condition that comes into manifest condition where in the entire process there's nothing but continual cause-effect change relationship going on. And then they say, no, it's like the rope snake. It's like the rope snake, or it's like the dream, they'll say. And then we'll say, it's not like the dream at all. Yeah. Because when the dream is there, the what is actually a nadi hasn't gone through any modification whatsoever. Whereas for them, the prakriti is continually going through modification. And so these all become objections. For us, the karyakarna resolves into the non-dual. That none of this creation that we experience has any being, or in fact, we would even say, we even dismiss the word creation. We don't accept the word creation. We don't say there's a creation. You know? Because who created it? You know? And where did the creation come from? Like, we'd say like this, and we for Drishtanta, we say like this, if you have a dream, or if I ask you to have a daydream or an imagination, is that a creation? Did you create that? Yeah. And what was the material cause of that creation? Yeah. See, there's no creation there. There's the manifestation of this, what we call creation is the manifestation of this world that enjoys my being, that is really just my being. But the manifestation of this world doesn't bring about any change to my being at all. That's why we call it mithya. That's the word, that's what it means. Right? Mithya means it doesn't have a cause-effect relationship with a dishtana. Just think of cause-effect relationship where the one thing causes the other. Think of the clay causing the pot. It is the material cause of the pot, right? But it hasn't caused anything, it's just remained as clay. And in fact, there is no pot. There's only clay. There's Advaita. The pot is only nitya. It has no being at all. Use rope snake. The rope is what is actually there. It is the material cause of the snake. It has not caused the snake. It hasn't become the snake. From its standpoint, there's only rope. There isn't a snake. So snake has no being, and it has no cause-effect relationship with the rope. So like that, my being, I have not and cannot and will not ever become anything. I'm not becoming a jiva. There is no jiva. The jiva is a product of ajnanam. The jivatvam, the ahankara, all of this, the mind, body, sense organs, all belong to this mithya world. This mithya world is nothing but me, and so it has its strength, it has its reality of my being. But my being is not transmigrating. I've never transmigrated. I will never transmigrate. I don't have any karma. I am not accruing karma. I am not becoming a good person or a bad person. I simply am. The good and bad, dharma, adharma, reincarnation, all of these things, heaven, hell, all of these things exist within duality. And they have their own, what we call vyavahara, their own empirical reality within duality. But their truth, what is the actually here, is just the conscious being, you know, which in St. Thomas Aquinas, he calls it the absolute simplicity of being. It doesn't matter, when you get to the mystics, it doesn't matter what the religion is, honestly. They're saying, they have their own theologies. But once you get to the mystical part, they're all talking maybe differently, but pointing to exactly the same thing, which is the absolute infinite simplicity of being. Absolute simplicity of being, the Buddhists will call it shunyata, absolute emptiness. Means there is nothing happening except my being, which is absolute ananda. So then you could say, just me? How boring. How empty. I don't want to be empty. Shunyata doesn't mean empty in that sense. Means empty of Namarupa, but I am the very being of Namarupa. I am the being of Ananda. I am what I seek. I am what I seek. That's the important thing when we talk about love or Ananda. We all seek love. We don't just seek love as an object, we seek being loved. That I can just close my eyes as a completed self. I am loved. And as being loved, I can love. But how can you love if you're not loved? So the completed self is I am loved. That's what we mean by ananda. That is the very nature of Ishwara. That's the nature of Brahman. Is that? It's an absolute completed state. From that absolute completed state, this Maya creation comes from beginningless time. But the completed state, not state in the sense of a state that changes, but just in the state of the very anadi, beginningless being of me, I'm not becoming the creation. The creation is an expression, a mithya expression of me. The whole creation is a mithya expression of me. And so now, what's interesting is you're gaining knowledge now. You get to be in this expression, this body, mind, sense organs, walking around in yourself. You are walking around in you. Your this little body, mind, sense organs is walking around in the infinite that we call Ishwara, that we call God. But this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of the whole creation, the whole Ishwara. Right? And so say you have knowledge of this, and then you recognize that my being, the being that is the very self of this body, mind, sense organs, this being is the very self of Ishwara. And so that means that this Ishwara, this whole creation, is really myself. It's this infinite intelligence is an expression, the infinite intelligence of the universe is an expression of my of the being, which is me. If I say my being, then there's a subject-object, you know, qualitative, but this being, which is me, that me, has this maya, which is mithya, which manifests beginningless as this entire creation. So we call this this infinite knowledge in the form of this creation. The infinite knowledge belongs to my being. And part of that expression of infinite knowledge is this body, this body, this body, this body, enjoying the prarabdha karma that makes up the surroundings of your life, including your body that is situated in it. Right? It's not just your body. It's the whole thing. It's the whole thing. The whole flow of your experience is the prarabdha karma. And it's being viewed through this vessel of your body. But it's not just this body. It's the whole part of Ishwara that you experience through your sense organs and mind. That's the prarabdha karma. None of it is away from Ishwara. It's all part and parcel of Bhagavan, of this infinite creation. But this infinite creation is who? It's yourself. There's only one self. And it's not yourself has become this. Yourself is the adhishtana, you know, like the rope. You're the adhishtana of this whole thing. And so as a jiva walking around, who's now getting knowledge, walking around in this creation, then you start to realize there's this limited knowledge of my body, mind, sense organs, extremely limited, compared to my infinite knowledge. And so I come into a different kind of relationship with all of my experiences. It's my relationship to Ishwara. And I look to the infinite knowledge, have a kind of surrender to the infinite knowledge to see how Bhagavan's handling the situation. And enjoying how Bhagavan is handling the situation, and I do my best moment to moment with the situation that Ishwara is giving to me. Like every situation becomes just a gift. And I take every situation as what Ishwara is asking me to do in this particular, what's given to me. That's all I do. Moment by moment by moment, there's many things that are asked of me to be done, and I do those things to the best of my ability, day by day, hour by hour. And I don't worry too much about the future. A sannyasi, in fact, does not worry about the future. Whatever comes is fine. It's yadrichaya. Yadrichaya means what comes as though by chance, what Bhagavan throws my way, as the prarabdha unfolds, that's what I do. And so I am able to live in the present and do my best in the present. It's not slothful. It's not like saying, oh, let me just sleep then. You know? There's much being asked of you. So many things are being asked of you as you go on living, but if you're in relationship to Bhagavan as part of that prarabdha karma, you just do what is being asked of you to do. That's your duty. That's what you do. But who's doing it? Not me. Yourself is not ever doing anything. You never took a birth. You will never take a birth. You are always the me that is right here in the present. And that me is the very absolute simplicity of being, you know, which is the ultimate reality of, Aquinas will say, the ultimate reality of God. That's the absolute simplicity of being. That is God, you know. That is myself. There's no Dwight that you can say, how could it be me? Isn't that an egocentric thing? No, because there is only God. There is no you. There is no you. The you is the self of God. And that's what's so beautiful. And your mind has no dwaita, there's no duality between you and Bhagavan. Because the very being, that meanness that is illumining this mind and this world, that, right, is the very self of Ishvara, the very self of God. So there is not a little self, your little self, and God's self. There's only God's self. There is only God. That's what it means. There's only God. The idea that there's a jiva is a product of ajnana. The jiva, the individuality, is a product of ignorance. You know, and as long as I have that ignorance, I'm operating off of that ignorance. But I'm operating off of ignorance. And because I'm operating out of ignorance, that's why I run into so much trouble. Because I'm not operating out of what actually is. And so that's why, you know, I'm always running after the horizon. I'm always running after trying to make things better for myself. You know, fulfill my desires and make things go in a way that I think will make me happy. I think this will make me happy. I think this will make me happy. You know what? Honestly, wrong. It's wrong. It's an illusion. Because the same thing that can make you happy one day, that very same thing can make you miserable the next day. You know? One thing that you thought you needed so badly, now it's at the garage sale. One person you loved, you now hate. It has nothing to do with anything. The ananda that you're seeking, right, is your own nature, and the illusion born of self-ignorance is that I project that nature of ananda onto an object, and then I run after that object. I get the object, then I don't get the ananda I was running after. So this we experience for beginningless lifetimes. I run after the object, I projected the ananda on, I get the object, and I don't get the ananda. And finally I say, wait a minute. That's after beginningless lifetimes, so we can't be very proud about it. It's taken a long, beginningless lifetimes, beginningless creations, yeah? Only to discover in the end that what I was seeking all along is my own being. That it's never not here, has never been born, never be born, is not subject to any type of cause-effect relationship, and at the same time is the being that the whole creation enjoys. And so really there's just because of beginningless lifetimes, there's this acting out within duality because of being subject to ignorance. And we slowly have to unwind all that. It does not unwind immediately. You know? It's like all of our samskaras, all of our tendencies, all of our ways of being in the world have to present themselves to the buddhi that now has knowledge. And that takes its own time. Your unconscious also slowly presents itself to my buddhi that has... It's like... Each one of these little pieces of jnanam comes and bows to my buddhi, bows to myself. And slowly they all just, over time, they all just drop off. And I just become, what happens is I stay as myself, as I've always been, but without the problems. Because the problems are all born of jnanam. And I get to enjoy being with Ishvara. I have this body, so I get to enjoy being with Ishvara. I get to enjoy just living in the present without worrying about it. You worry so much. You don't really have to worry at all. Not at all. It doesn't even matter. Somebody like Swamiji, who handled so much. Oh my gosh, he had so many ashrams. He had all of this. This started here, that started there, that started. Aim for Seva started. All these people who need this and need that and need this. All this money having been being accumulated and passed out. Tons of it. He never worried. He just did what was there to be done to the best of his ability. And, you know, if Bhagavan doesn't want it to work, it'll crash, that's all. He did his best, and he never worried. I worked with him so closely as a manager for so many years, you know, working, doing all of this work with him, and then being on the board, and going through all of this, seeing how he does it. Whatever's there, he does it to the best of his ability, and just keeps doing it, keeps doing it, keeps doing it. He's just, it's good work, it has a life of its own, it'll take care of itself. Never worries. And the more we live that way, the more we live that way. Because it's so appealing. The more you do it, 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 and just start enjoying your life and enjoying Ishwara, what Bhagavan's giving you. Because you have, this is your choice. Enjoy it or don't enjoy it. You know? Relax or worry. But your relaxing and worrying doesn't change anything except your own well-being. So you can be present and engage and do what's being asked of you, you know, and use all of the reactions and things that come up. Just that's your sadhana to work on those things. That's all the sadhana. And when the sadhanas aren't present, that means there's no problem. So then you just being present. Actually just being Ishwara. Being Ishwara, because there's no jiva trying to make it be different. You know, it's very, very beautiful. But all of this logic that he's been given, what it's all about is to make you recognize your own freedom. The freedom of being itself. You're not a jiva. You haven't become anything. It's anadi, you're not able to become anything. There's no need to become anything, but you can't become anything because you're beginningless. You're beginningless, so you're unborn. There's no way for you to change or need to change or want to change. All of this is only mithya. It enjoys you completely, but it doesn't have any effect on you. That's the truth of it. So, a little bit more. Let me stop here. Om Swasti Prajapya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashivamasti Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshati Parjanyaha Prithvi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Varahidaha Brahmana Santi Nirpayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sarakamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotir Gamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guruvyo Namaha Hari Om. Thank you. Yeah, I read your note, didn't you?
You make it sound like there's a choice between relaxing and worrying.
That's the whole point.
Well, the worry starts to drop off. The worry starts to drop off as you start to be more in the present, more at Shraddha and Bhagavan. The Shraddha and Bhagavan really resolves into knowledge. You know, people who have a lot of belief and a lot of faith in Bhagavan can have relaxation just because of that belief and faith. But that belief and faith actually resolves into knowledge. Then it's not about belief anymore. It's about understanding. You know, and as you really understand and find yourself through practice, you understand something, but then you start living it. And you just recognize the truth of it and how much better it is. You know, how much better it is to... It's not about... It, to be present to your life, to your own prarabdha, and to really live it and do what's being asked of you. You have plenty to do. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen in the future, what happened in the past, really. There's plenty to deal with right here, right now. And then you're working with reality. You're working Ishwara Srishti, the reality that is here. You're actually engaging in it and doing what's being asked of you. And if you find you have some limitations, then you work on that. If you find, as sadhana, if you find that you're still worrying and projecting into the future, you recognize that and start to rope it in. So even you can have little mantras like, okay, you're out there winged out into the future. You know, work. Say, okay, let's come back now to the present. You say that because you know what you're doing. It's not just an empty practice. It's actually based upon what you know. And your mind is of course not living up to what you know. There's an emotional lag time. And so when your mind is going off like that, then you just come home. And it's very enlightening, actually. You just bring yourself home to the present, and you just say, what is here right now for me to do? You know, what is being asked of me right now for me to do? Let me do that. Let not waste all my time in this imaginal land of worry and stress. Let me come back to reality. This is the reality as though reality in terms of empirical reality versus subjective, you know, the subjective reality that we spend a lot of time living in that's not really based on anything. Except, you know, our fears and our worries.
Well, so should you scan your understanding? Also, is there some kind of cheese hole there?
Yeah, when you're feeling worried, you're feeling, very worried or very down, nothing's going right for me and all this, it's all a projection. You bring yourself back to the present and you just say, how are things now? What is the truth right now? Let me deal with right now. And there might be difficult things now, but those things are here to be dealt with as opposed to the nightmare that's created in your mind. At least there might be something worrisome here now, but it's here now and you can do something about it. You can engage with it. As opposed to your imaginal world, which creates just as much, I'd say, much more misery. Because when the problem is here right now, you're busy dealing with it. You know? But when it's in your imaginal world, then you're creating all kinds of affect, and with catastrophic thinking, which the mind tends to do, you always go to the worst scenario, and you're creating a nightmare emotional state for yourself, you know?
Sometimes worrying, though, it seems to be directed. Like, I was distracted a lot today because I've got some things coming up at work. But some of the thoughts were worries, but some of them were actually like, oh, that's something I can do.
Yes, and that's the good thing. That's something I can do. That's something here now to do.
Well, I can't do it now because I was in class not paying attention. You know, so it was a problem. But it's something I'll be able to do tomorrow or later tonight or whatever.
Right. So, but that's good. Maybe that you couldn't be present to the class because you were distracted thinking about that is just how things are sometimes. But the good thing is that there's something for you to engage in. It's not just, you know. Later, as time goes on, I think what you'll be able to say you wanted to be in the present to the class, but all these other things were pressuring you.
Right.
You know? It'll become a time when you can say, okay, I'll take care of that tomorrow. That's one of the reasons, like, or I'll take care of that, you know, when I get home. You'll be able to do that. What we do as a practice to develop that skill is in meditation, one of the stages of meditation is, say, you relax your body, you know, get yourself into a relaxed position, don't put any time limit on the meditation, not too short, that's when the time is not an issue. And then you say to your conscious mind, what are the things that you're concerned about that you want, that need to be taken care of? Then you list out those things and you say, okay, this I will do, this is what I'll do, I'll take care of this tomorrow, or after the meditation I'll take care of this, I'm aware of all these things. Then you can set them to rest. That's a skill. You know, like, I know that if I have a lot of to-dos, if I write those things down in my to-do list so that I know I can check them off and they'll still be there, my mind doesn't have to worry about it. I've acknowledged them, yes, I have to do these things. Here's the list. Then the to-do list is there and I can let it go. So you kind of do a to-do list in your mind and you say, okay, yep, that will do, I'll do that, I'll do that. That means you're just organizing your day and the things that are a present for you to do now. That's a good thing. You just have to learn how to manage it. That's much different. That's organizing your time that can allow you to contemplate or be in class knowing that these things have to be taken care of. Those are these things occur.
Yeah, you don't have to remember it. If you write it down, it'll still be there when you look back at the page, you know.
That's why I write it down.
Yeah, otherwise
your mind's trying to remember the whole list all the time.
Yeah, and then they overlap on each other and then swirl around and pretty soon you don't know what time it is.
Well, sometimes I actually did that earlier today. I didn't get most of the stuff done.
Well, you have to check off, if you're like me, you have to check off the things you did get done. You feel a little bit better.
Prioritize.
What? Prioritize. Yeah. I never finish my whole list in one day. So Amjay had stacks of paper like this. And I've never seen him finish a stack. It's just way too much. Busy people don't clear their desk. Yeah. You know, you have all this stuff on your desk, the desk doesn't get cleared because there's way too much, but it has to be organized so that you know what needs to be done.
And it never seemed to bother him, that pile. He would just...
He just worked on it. It didn't bother him because he did his best. He did his best. But that's really hard for some people. You have way more to do than you can do in one day. You can't clear your desk. And I think the longer you live, the more it's like that. The desk doesn't get cleared because there's too many things on it. You know, but you know how to organize it, and you know how to just deal with what can be done today, and you do your best. But you're in the present. A lot of times you're just not living in the present at all. Lita's got a question she's been trying to ask me for a while. How does free will relate to everything just happening? We have to say it in kind of more Vedantic language. We have two things. We have the prarabdha karma, which is the very karmas that brought you into this life and take you all the way through the death. So that prarabdha karma, the situation you find yourself in, is always happening. Within the prarabdha karma, you have free will. And I think a good way, you have choices that you can make. In other words, I would say the most free will, the one way to look at free will in a very simple form is dharma adharma. In any given situation, I can actually do what is being asked of me to be done, but it's kind of often obvious, not always obvious, but often it's just there. Look, these are the things that are expected of me that are needed. And I can say, this is what, these things is what I should do, I suppose, but I don't want to do them, I'm going to do this. And then I start moving away from what's expected of me. And so I have some free will to the way I respond to the prarabdha karma that I find myself in. You don't have enough free will to get out of the prarabdha karma, right? But you have enough free will to affect the prarabdha karma, to affect everybody in it. You know, like your attitude affects everybody else. We don't often realize that. In school we do little exercises around that just to gain some consciousness that our presence actually affects other people. We don't have any problem with realizing that in terms of everybody else in the room. You know, but we tend to think of ourselves often as invisible. Like we're not really in the room. Everybody else is in the room affecting me, but I'm not in the room affecting everybody else. That's the same with the golden rule. I understand the golden rule perfectly in terms of how everybody should be treating me. But that doesn't necessarily mean I've really understood it in terms of how I should be treating everybody else. You know, so that way that I have some free will in the way I respond to the situation, the prarabdha karma that I find myself in. And in fact, I think that really our sadhana, the whole karma yoga buddhi, is the process of coming into harmony with Ishvara, where my highest priority is that what we call that Ishvara arpana buddhi, that service of Bhagavan, serving Ishvara, is dharma. Ishvara is dharma. And so what becomes most important to me is to do my dharma in the situation. This idea of raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes go out the window, really, totally irrelevant. What I want or what I don't want, it doesn't matter at all. What matters for my own happiness, really, is what is asked of me in the situation, is being in harmony with the situation. If I really want happiness, even on the level of samsara, if I really want happiness and deep peace, it has to do with doing my dharma in a given situation. And anything else is more or less irrelevant. If there's some fun thing I want to do and it doesn't go against the dharma, then fine. But it's basically froth. It really doesn't matter in terms of my well-being. You know, and so more and more that karma yoga buddhi takes place, and the free will is something that it's really not that operational. I don't really need to use free will, because what is being asked of me is a bigger will. I'm more surrendered to a bigger will, to Ishvara's will, as opposed to my will. I don't really care about my will. I care about Ishvara's will, of which I am a part. So in that way, the will that you have is not, gets surrendered in a sense to your bigger self, to dharma. You can say, you can talk like that. You know?
And how does that come about, to say that I would rather surrender to Ishvara's will rather than my own will?
It comes about through knowledge. Just like the surrender, you think, oh, let me surrender to a God, I don't even know who I'm surrendering to.
Yeah, exactly.
But knowledge, you do know. You do understand. And as you understand that surrender, if you want to use the word surrender, it becomes more and more natural. But we have our own complexes and our raga dveshas, our likes and dislikes, a lot of which are deeply rooted in complexes or hurts or pains, and are all these issues have to be taken care of. Like all the inner child work and all that, that's all part of our situation. And, you know, thinking that the world is supposed to be one way, or Ishvara is supposed to be like this and not like this, and I was cheated.
Yeah. Well, you're talking inner child work. stuff going on psychologically with us that is there dormant thing?
Yeah. There's a lot of psychological stuff that's dormant. That's why inner child work is very useful. And I would say, like, for instance, if you find yourself in any kind of emotional reaction, you know, the first thing to do before you move out here and respond to it externally is to just be with that reaction, to actually come into relationship with it and just sit with it. And then you just say to yourself, what am I really upset about? Tell me what's really bothering me. And start getting to the crux of it. Because usually the reaction is not so much about what's going on out here. Usually when there's difficulties out here, there's problems out here, there's problematic people, all of this exists. It's not that it doesn't exist. But usually you can objectively handle it and just do what needs to be done in that situation and work with that person or work with that difficulty or that problem, and you just deal with it. There's not this big thing going on. There's a big thing going on inside, like all kinds of hurt or pain, all these things that we feel. Then, first thing to do is just be with yourself and just sit with that pain and come into relationship with it and say, tell me what's really bothering you. And then have that inner dialogue. And that tends to be really very, very helpful.
Because Swamiji seemed to be a natural about all this. You couldn't really see any rough edges like it, or even rough edges that he had to work on. And it just,
he did work on things though, but he worked on a lot of things internally, but he also didn't have some of the traumas that we have. But he did have traumas. He lost his father when he was 8 years old. And then a lot of the trauma and pain of that was buried in him until his last few months of life.
Yeah.
When they gave him that picture of his father and mother, and a lot of things. He wasn't even really aware of how much grief he had buried when he was little. And he experienced all of that. But he had a lot of natural strength and a lot of natural antikarma shuddhi. Not quite the living in the dharmic soup that we live in.
And that grief he experienced, that surprised him, right? I mean,
it surprised him. How much was there surprised him. And he felt very compassionate. He's such a compassionate person. He's a very compassionate person toward everyone, including toward all of that grief. He's very compassionate toward it. He doesn't exclude himself from his kindness. And that's very, so important.
Mm.
No being is excluded from his kindness. Not even animals and butterflies and plants. Not at all. Zero. And inside and out, 360 degrees. And so he was very gentle with those feelings.
Yeah.
Did Swamiji go live with him?
His mother raised him. His mother, and there were other aunts and uncles. I remember many years ago he said, some of us as Westerners were putting down antibiotics and things, and he said, don't ever talk about antibiotics like that. My father would have had antibiotics, he would have lived.
Yeah.
He said, you have no idea. There's no such thing as antibiotics, people aren't going to live very long.
Yeah.
But he said that with some feeling,
So, getting back to the thing you're talking about with Edward, sometimes it seems like for me at least, the making the adharmic choice doesn't necessarily, it's not like, oh, I'm going to do the bad thing or the wrong thing. It just sort of happens, and then later it's like, oh, yeah, I messed up. And I might even have this intention, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to bed early tonight or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, my God, it's, 1 in the morning. I've got to get up
you have to keep working on it. Especially, you know, if you continually find a weakness, a way of responding to people, and you say, I'm going to stop that. I don't want to respond to people like that, or something like this, you know. And then you keep doing it. Because it's just not that easy sometimes, certain things to change. But you keep working on it. And don't feel like things are just going to change overnight because you say so.
Yeah.
Some things take a little time. You know, but that's what you should. What I'm saying is, say you're working on something, some behavior pattern in yourself that you know it's not the best for you or for others. You know it. So you want to change it. So you might say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to try to be different in that way. But tomorrow you find you're exactly the same. The next day you say, okay, I'm going to try to be different in that way. Exactly the same. But those are for the really tenacious ones. But, you know, you don't have a value for that. You have a value for patience and kindness, and you have that's where your heart is. You're not able to live up to it. Just keep chipping away at it. Don't be impatient. Any mastery, any real mastery, it takes some time, especially for the things that are more challenging. There's those little ones that you can master right away, but the challenging ones, and it takes some time. You should be just keep working, and you'll find that over time that changes because you want it to change. And your intention becomes more real also. Becomes more important to you because of your values. When your behavior is not really living up to your values, and that is your value. That's why this fake it till you make it is not real, really, because the faking it is that you're trying to live up to the values. You know, and you're not able to yet. So sometimes you're faking it, trying to catch it and live out those values that have not really been integrated yet. But that's what we should do. You are more your values than the manas. Those are what are the most real.
And is this situation universal, or is it just for mumukshu who struggle with this?
It's only for you.
That's what I was afraid of.
It's everybody's struggle. Dharma, adharma is everybody's struggle, but you become more sophisticated as you mature in terms of dharma and adharma. And as you become more sophisticated, you get more inner space. And then that mumukshutvam and that wanting to just abide in your own being becomes more and more and more dominant because you have more space inside for it to become more dominant. You have to be. The whole thing, be is, you know, do shravana, manana, nididhyasana, and sadhana. That's all it is. Be gentle. Think of raising a child. You can give to your child so much. You give so much love and care and structure and help. But imagine giving structure and help without love and care. That's horrible. That love and care has to be there, and within the love and care, the structure. Then it works, everybody's happy. Everybody feels like they're growing, they're being taken care of, and it's all fine. But without the gentleness, this doesn't work. Inside and out, it doesn't work.
Well, that's why it was always a joy to be around Swamiji, because he...
Gentle lion.
He had that. Mm-hmm. He kind of embodied it. It just was like, it was him.
It was that, yeah. You can always relax. No surprises. Okay, so let's follow the net. That's it.
So we did, four verses, or what number?
We did a few.
We finished 17.
Yeah, we can just scoot along.
Scoot along. Everybody, if you can afford it, give me a few dollars into the lucky pot. I'm getting there. And we're getting close. Yeah. I think I need a few hundred more, but even now I can manage.
Lucky's going to be so grateful.
Lucky's going to be lucky.
Lucky is.
What a character he is. He's still in for some hard times. Yeah, getting him in the crate, carrying him over all that travel.
It's a long haul. Yeah.
It's a long haul.
Dog ears.
And then how about snow? What's Lucky going to think about snow and ice? You know?
Once Lucky's free, he'll be fine. Yeah, and he's got people who love him. It's the transport.
It's like his coat's going to have to grow. And,
oh.
I mean, it'll be fun to sniff out all the new things when it gets there.
Safe
travel.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was fun sniffing out India, too, when you get there.
I'm sure.
That cause and effect.
Well, I said one thing. I'm going to turn this back on, and we're not going to say anything more about Lucky, because I don't want it to get back to the ashram. I don't want to upset the ashram people.
Lucky.
Okay, so all right, here we go. No more Lucky. Okay. What about cause and effect?
Just that when it comes to people, when somebody has a son, then oftentimes it brings out the father in the person. So in a way,
That's true. In fact, your mother and father come out all the time in our friends too. So many people. So
And
good night, Sri. I hope I see you soon.
And it's like when you're growing up with your mother and father or your mother, you don't think anything's happening there. But they're just around the house, you know.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks. I'm glad it was good for you. Night. Night, Catherine. See you soon. See you soon, Divya. Thanks, Barbara. Okay, everybody. Good night.